And I think they had a very angry artist because all the layers were just like, oh, this is stupid. I hate this. You know, like really, like the,
oh, really?
Yeah, the layer names is kind of like that.
Welcome to Press Start. Back again with me, Adam Adhisa Smita, CEO of Arsanesia and Vice President of Indonesia Game Association. I'm going to be your host for this episode. And as usual, in Press Start, we're going to talk about game development and how to start your career to be a game developer. We're going to invite expert in this area to share with us their journey, their experience, so maybe we can learn a bit and get inspired by their journey. So I hope this podcast can give you insight and courage to start your career in the game industry. And don't forget to stay tuned because this season 3 of Press Start, we're going to have, I think, new episodes every Monday. So stay tuned. And of course, this podcast is brought to you by Indonesia Game Association and Goethe Institute Jakarta. So today we're going to have a really special guest. She's from Malaysia and working in UK. And I think her story is really, really interesting. So without further ado, let's welcome Anissa. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Anissa. It's nice to have you here. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Are you now in UK or in Malaysia, or where are you right now?
So I usually live and work in the UK, but today I'm back in Malaysia visiting family. And yeah, it's very warm. It's very, very hot here.
True. But right now in UK is summer, right?
It is. Yeah. It is a summer. And it's actually quite nice. We had a bit of a heat wave in London a few days ago, just before I left. Yeah. So I was thinking, oh, this is good training for when I come back to Malaysia to deal with the heat again.
deal with the heat. Right. Before we start, can you share with the audience, like, what's your activity today? What's your role and the game that you're working?
So I'm Anissa Sanusi, and I'm based in the UK, and I am a senior UI designer. So I do UI and UX for video games, and the most recent game that I worked on is called Rollerdrome, and we just announced it on the PlayStation State of Play, and it's releasing this August, and I'm really, really excited for people to actually play it because we've been working on it for like two, three years now.
Nice. It's about what it's called, roller skating.
Roller skate. So it's kind of like if you've played Tony Hawk, the skateboarding game, it's kind of like that, but with roller skates and we have guns.
Right. I think that's a really unique combination. Cannot wait to play this. All right. So Anissa, before we start, usually we're gonna ask the guests some questions, trivial questions. Don't worry, there's no right or wrong. There's no scoring or leaderboard. So this is just a trivial question. Ready? So the first question that we're going to ask to you is, Anissa, do you remember what is the title of the first video game that you ever played?
I think I had the very, very first game is probably like on the Sega Mega Drive. I think it's called, I don't know. Oh my God, I don't really remember what it's called, but like, I think people who play retro games would know this. It's like mini macro racing something where like you play as tiny little cars, on like real life things. So you play like on a snooker table or in a bathroom, but like it's a racing game, but all the cars are like super small. Yeah, I don't know if you heard about it.
Yeah, if any of the listener can guess, you can put a comment. Let's see if any of you also remember that kind of game. But Anissa, when you play the game, when you play in Sega Mega Drive, was it you own a console, or your parents gave you console, or you played in your friends?
It was in the family, yeah, because I have two older brothers, and they're huge nerds as well. Like, we all really liked reading comics and playing video games. So I think it was my brother who begged for us a Sega Mega Drive from my dad. And my dad, he really likes electronics and gadgets and things. So we were lucky that, you know, like, we didn't have to beg too much, because I think he was also interested in seeing how the thing works. But yeah, like, our dad bought us our first Sega Mega Drive, and then we got a PlayStation 1 after that one. Yeah.
I see. So, but like, basically, like, most of the parents, right, they usually don't give permission for their children to play video games, maybe restrict them, maybe ban video game from the house. So in your case, you got a family that are really supportive in the game into their household.
Well, yeah, I think because it was emerging technology, it was very new at the time, and we all really liked the stories and the characters, so it wasn't too bad. But I think, not to say like our parents were super okay with it, because my dad would always say like, Anisa, you spend too much time in front of the TV, your eyes is going to turn into squares. That's what he used to say. And yeah, like, I think around teenage years, I kept playing so many games. Like, I just wouldn't stop. And I think that was always that worry that, like, I was spending too much time playing video games. But obviously, I work in games now. So, whoops, it's a job.
Right. That's really interesting. And is there any kind of, like, some rules like your parents put in the house? Like, for example, you can only play on the weekend, or you can only play 1 hour a day, or something like that?
I don't think there were rules, but it was very much like there was a lot of trust where, you know, as long as I did my schoolwork, as long as, you know, I didn't like get bad grades, it's like, yeah, you know, it's fine. So basically, if my report card came back good, like I get like A's and B's, then, you know, I can do whatever I want. But but also, like, I think I'm a special case, because in school, I did everything. Like, you know, I was a prefect. I was in all the clubs. I was a club president for the computer club. I was, you know, doing all, I was going to like all the extra classes. So yeah, I was like one of those people who just did everything all the time, including playing video games. So I think my parents didn't mind it too much.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Okay. So that's the first question. So the second question is, if we ask about the first game, now we're going to ask about the last game that you played before this session.
Oh, I was literally, so the game that I'm currently playing that is actually on pause right now. So right after this, I'm going to go back to it. So my favorite console at the moment is the Nintendo Switch. So all of my most recent games is on that. And the game that I'm currently playing is called Bravely Default 2. I don't know if you heard of it. Okay, so a lot. Okay, I love Bravely Default because growing up, I played a bunch of Final Fantasy games. So I'm a huge Final Fantasy fan. And Bravely Default is actually a 3DS game that came out a few years ago. So Bravely Default 2 is actually the third game in the Bravely Default series. I know, it's insane. Because, like, the people, I think a lot of like people who used to work at Final Fantasy kind of wanted to make another very Final Fantasy-ish game, but they rebranded it a different brand from the Final Fantasy series. So that's how we get the Bravely Default series. So the Bravely Default is very classic JRPG stuff. You know, it's turn-based, it's a fantasy setting, and you have like a lot of jobs and classes, and you kind of work your way through a story. So I've played the first two Bravely Default games, and this is the third one that is, I think this is the first one that is on the Switch, because the first two games is on the Nintendo 3DS. And obviously, like, I think they're stopping the Nintendo eShop for the 3DS games now, which is quite sad. Yeah, because obviously, you know, the Switch is the thing now. But yeah, so I love JRPGs, and Bravely Default 2 is my current game. Before this, it was Octopath Traveler. which is also another JRPG game. Yeah, so I'm kind of I'm on a JRPG like binge right now. So I'm just because I have some time off and I just want to catch up on all of the JRPGs that I haven't had the chance to play.
I see. Is it safe to say that your favorite genre is JRPG, or there's another kind of game that you also enjoy playing?
Yeah, I would say JRPG is the main one. Because outside of JRPGs, I do enjoy, I like things that I can take slow. So things with story, with narrative, or puzzle games that is, you know, where you're kind of like more thinking about strategy games. So tactical games I love. So I don't know if you know Fire Emblem. The Fire Emblem series is, I insanely love Fire Emblem since Awakening up until Three Houses now. So yeah, these kind of games are like the stuff that I really like playing.
I see. Interesting. All right. So the next question, Anisa, besides playing a video game, what is your other hobbies for or entertainment?
It's gonna be embarrassing, but I actually really like roller skating.
is that the reason why you joined that game?
No, it's really funny because everybody thinks that, oh, is that why that you joined the company, or because I started skating only like a year and a half ago. So I basically started skating when I started working on this on Rollerdrome, but it's actually it's a coincidence because it was my friend who got into roller skating and she basically peer pressured me into getting some skates. And then I peer pressured another friend and then we all peer pressured more people to join. So it becomes like a skate gang. But yeah, like all the while I was making this roller skating game as well at work, it was just complete coincidence. And it's kind of funny because people think, when Rollerdrome, the trailer came out, because it was roller skating, people were like, oh, I wonder if Anisa did this. And then they were like, yep, that's me.
Which one happened first? You joining the company who create a game about roller skate, or you learn roller skate?
I joined the company first. I kind of, I was already working on it a little bit for like a few months before I bought my first skates, but yeah, I have to say that the playing the game and actually skating is very different.
But when you're skating, you're not using guns, right?
No, I would like my hands to be free because you know I fall down so much, so like I don't think I can shoot at the same time.
Yes. Nice. All right. So this is the last question before we start talking about your career. Mm-hmm. So do you remember what is your dream job as a kid? What do you want to be?
I think I wanted to be an astronaut.
Astronaut? That's random. Yeah. Why? What makes you want to be an astronaut?
Oh my God. Embarrassing. But like, I was a Sailor Moon fan. So Sailor Moon got me really interested in outer space and astronomy and things like that. And I think depending on what age I was, I think your ambition kind of changes. So I was very young, definitely I wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to see the moon for myself. But then as I grew older, I wanted to do something in art, which meant I wanted to be in comics. I used to draw a lot of comics when I was younger, so I really wanted to be a comic artist. And when I went to university, it was to become an animator because I wanted to be in animation and film, but obviously kind of life brought me here in video games, so
all right. So so let's jump into the main topic for today. So a lot of the listener here, maybe they're fresh graduate, maybe they're from other industry that's start looking on into the game industry and wants to know how to start, what kind of skills needed and something like that. So for starters, maybe my question will be, do you remember when was the time that you decided that I want to have a career in the game industry, and what was the trigger?
So I mentioned earlier that I've always wanted to do something creative, something to do with drawing, something to do with art. And I joined a university that was teaching animation. And when I was studying animation, like animation and games were very like, they were always two sides of the same coin, because obviously in video games, there's a lot of similar things. So like in animation, you know, you create stories, you create like, you do world building, you create characters, and obviously there's actual animation as well, you know, but the thing that is the same between the two industries is that it's about storytelling. And that's where a lot of creatives try to, you know, express themselves. So it is just a medium, like animation or video games. It's just a medium of how you tell a story, right? And I learned a little bit about game development when I was in university, but at the time, it wasn't really something that I thought I could do, which is weird because I'm already in university for it, right? So that's how, because when I'm playing the games, it feels like, so I don't know how it's made. I don't know how anything, you know, how things work. And it feels very, you know, it's like a black box of the unknown. Like, how do you even start in that, right? So I wanted to be in animation instead. And this might sound bad. I don't know. Bad or good or like weird. I don't know. But like, I actually kind of fell into video games without really meaning to. Yeah.
How come?
Yeah, I think like this is actually a story that a lot of when I talk to other people in games, especially people who are like women or people, you know, are slightly different, like the path is so different for everybody. It's hard to tell you like, oh, if you just do this, you can definitely get a job because everybody's path is different, right? So for me, I actually wanted to work in film, but at the time I was actually really, really bad in 3D. So, you know, 3D modeling or 3D animation, anything to do with 3D, to me, it was so technical and it was so difficult. And I was just like, I didn't understand the software, because if anybody has ever tried learning like Blender or Maya or anything, like you will understand just how like you know, it might be a checkbox here or a setting there that you're just like, oh, I, you know, unless you're really good at it, unless you're very technical minded, it's very difficult for certain people, like for me especially, because I just prefer to draw by hand. You know, I prefer just drawing things on paper or, you know, drawing things in Photoshop or things like that. So I was very much like a 2D artist in that sense. So my first 2 years fresh out of university was just doing odd freelance work for animation, for ads, I worked for in this small company called Arcus Animation Studios, and they're still going now, which is amazing because not a lot of studios, especially when you start that small, could survive for this long. But they gave me my first start, and I'm still friends with the founders now. And that animation studio, like they did a lot of like explainer videos. So if a company has like a concept or something they need to explain to people, sometimes having an animated like 2 minute video, that kind of thing, you know, where so it's all client work and stuff. Yeah. So in that time, we used to animate in After Effects. So with After Effects, it's a lot of vector animation. So we use vectors, and vectors is like it's a thing that you kind of create in Illustrator and things like that. So it's slightly different from, say, rasterized images that you do with concept art. So a lot just so happens, right? A lot of the skills that I was using at the time doing After Effects animation and making like vector images, they were actually really like the exact 2D art skills that a company at the time needed. So two things. I got really, really lucky. Number one, I just happened to have the skills that they needed. And number two, they happened to have a job open for someone specifically like me, specifically in that area of that country. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I want to say like, it is like half of it is having a portfolio perfect for somebody. And secondly, having that perfect opportunity to come up at the time. Yeah. So at the time, it was a very small studio. They're called Double 11, and I think if there's any Malaysians out there listening to this, that might sound familiar because Double 11 just recently opened a Malaysian studio as well, like a Malaysian office here. Yeah, And back when I first started there, there were just, it was small. It was so, so small. We had like one small building, you know, like one floor in a quite small office building in Middlesbrough.
Oh, it is already in UK?
Yeah, yeah. So when I went to university, I was in UK. So my first...
I see. All right.
Sorry, I probably should have said that from the start.
I thought it was still in Malaysia. And all right, so you study in UK. All right, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, so I did secondary school in Malaysia. I finished my SPM. And then I did a diploma in the One Academy, which is also in Malaysia. I think a lot of people, if you're into art, you might know that art college. But I did I finished my degree in the UK in Teesside. Yeah, so Teesside is in this little town called Middlesbrough. And Middlesbrough is where Double 11 was at the time. Yeah, I think they're still there, probably. Yeah, but like Double 11 has, you know, they've expanded quite a bit, and now they've got like a Malaysian office. And I know quite a few people working there as well. So
it's what the first time that you work in the game industry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at Double 11. Yeah, I think I was only, so that was in 2013. Yeah, so that was I was only like in my early 20s at the time.
And what's the role that you apply in Double 11?
It was a 2D artist role. Yeah. So when I first joined the company, I did not even know what UI was. So UI stands for user interface, and UI and UX design, user experience design, are the things that I'm very passionate about right now. And it's one of the things that I'm known for. But yeah, so when I first joined the industry, I didn't even know my role existed. That's how, like, I didn't know anything. I just knew they needed somebody to do 2D artwork and things like that. And I happened to have the skills. And I remember they did give me... So at the time, we were still using Flash. I don't know if people...
Flash.
Yeah,
oh my
Flash.
God.
Yeah, that's how like old it is, right? Like a very long time ago.
Yes.
Yeah, and we were using Flash. And like I never used Flash because I used all these other programs, right? So they sent me an art test. And I learned Flash in like 3 days to pass the art test. And wow. I got the job. So yeah. And obviously, once I got in there, like, I learned so much, because at the moment you step foot in a working environment, thankfully I had like a bunch of really, really good colleagues who really helped me out to learn how things work. But I did so many mistakes at the, you know, like again, fresh new junior artist. I did so much mistakes, but people were really nice and I was enthusiastic, and you pick up software so quick if it's something that you care about. I think that's when I realized maybe the reason I was bad at 3D is because I just didn't really care that much. Whereas, when I started doing, you know, UI and graphic design and things like that, like I learned so quick. It's all about like knowing what you like doing.
I see. I think the topic about UI and UX, especially UX, is very, very interesting. And we're going to touch into that later on. But what I wanted to know is, before, your skill set is mainly in animation, right? And then you do freelance to create like, it's still animation, right? When you do freelance, or it's already a game asset or no, or for animation?
No.
When you did freelance?
No, it was just random jobs. So I made like posters, I made ads, and animation, like small and like short animation work. I think I did like an art installation for like when you walk through a park, and then they project and you know, a bit of animation onto like the wall or something. Yeah. So like it's just a lot of random jobs. None of them were games related, but it was all about the skill, like, you know, learning how to make art. Yeah.
I see. And translating the passion that you have from art and the skill set that you have before into the process of creating 2D assets from game. Is it hard to adjust, or what's the main difference between the animation industry and the game industry? that you found out when you are in the Double 11?
I think because video games are a lot more technical, so there's a lot of video games is just smoke and mirrors, you know. It's just things that are put together and it gives you the illusion of how a video game works. I don't know, like, the moment you see how a video game is being made, like behind the scenes, like I feel sometimes the, you know, part of the magic is like, oh, you know, like you can't unsee it anymore. Kind of like, yeah. So now that since working in games, if I play a video game in my head, I'm always analyzing the game, thinking like, oh, how did they make this? How did they make this level? Or like, how did they make this UI? And I'm just like, oh, I wonder if they used this, you know, this engine or this thing or whatever. So yeah, but like, I would say like the biggest difference is a technical difference. Because like, let's say you're designing a poster or drawing an image and, you know, you're doing like a composition. The image doesn't really move. Like, you know, like a composition for an animation, let's say, you know, you have the character here. Let's say character is here and it moves here, you know, and you have a background, you have a foreground, you know, you have some lighting, you know, and kind of that's your composition, right? Especially in 2D animation, there's not really that much like the camera, you know, is set there. If you want to like move the camera somewhere else, you have to draw a whole new, like, you know, whole new scene, right? And you might need a completely different like character rig because it's 2D. But with video games, especially with like UI and stuff, everything's very dynamic. Because like, if you think about it, you know, a camera could be facing here or facing there. You know, what if a player jumps when this happened, or a player, you know, opens a menu here? So even the menu, if you imagine that you're designing a poster, you know, like the text goes here and image goes here, it doesn't move, you know, that's it. But in video games, like, it might be dynamic. So what if the box, you know, like if you click this, a pop-up opens. If you click this, this opens up, or this gets smaller, something is glowing, you know, or you have a notification. Or my favorite thing is localization. So with a poster, it's just in English, you know. With video games, you have to translate it into like 10 different languages and to make sure that, you know, your UI works in those 10 languages. And you have to make sure the fonts look good, and you have to make sure that, you know, nothing gets cut off, nothing's too short, too long, because we have, you know, we have languages where it's very short, like Japanese and Chinese languages, because they're all like, you know, the characters, you don't need that many characters for a sentence. And then you have like really long languages like German and French that goes on forever. And your UI needs to accommodate for all of that. So I guess, yeah, like, video games is just a lot more technical, and there's a lot more that could go wrong, so much more wrong, because you have people like, you know, playing with your product. Whereas with animation, they're just sitting there and watching it. It's a very passive thing. But with video games, you know, we always have to anticipate, like, oh, what if a player does this? What if the player does that? You know, and do we allow the player to do this, or should we like not allow it? Or yeah, so. Every little thing, like, there's always consequences, and you have to think about it like 200 times.
Wow, that's really interesting, because I know that maybe like a lot of listeners from this podcast, maybe their background is from animation, from graphic designer, because that industry is more mature, especially in Indonesia, such as Asia, rather than in game industry. And knowing that difference, it might help them to anticipate what kind of skill or what kind of like what do they need to expect when they work on the games. So when you adjusting yourself in the game industry for the first time, the most memorable tips or experience or failure that you remember that maybe really helpful for everyone's that jumping from animation industry or graphic designer into game industry?
I would say like something that I still do now is that I Google everything. And I think people need to understand that no one will remember everything. Like, people are constantly looking, like, our brains are for thinking, they're not for remembering, right?
Yep.
And just because you need to Google something doesn't mean that you don't understand something. The most important thing is that if you know what you're trying to do and you know enough terms of, like, you know, like, because it's, again, it's a very technical thing. So if you know what words to use, how to look for your answers, then everything is open to you. And that's the most amazing thing about game dev. And for me, like, because like my very first video games company, we didn't use Unity or Unreal. Those two are like the more well-known engines for video games right now. Mm-hmm. My first job didn't use it. My second job didn't use it. My third job was probably the first time I ever used Unity. And right now, like, I'm in between jobs at the moment, but my next one, we're using a completely different engine as well. So, and also I mentioned Flash. I don't use Flash anymore. Yeah. So we use Flash in the first two jobs. And then now I use a thing called Figma. Figma is also a very super new tool that just came out recently. All these tools are constantly changing. It's technology, you know, we're always upgrading it. There's always something new that's coming up. You know, there will be something new in the future that hasn't been invented yet. And the thing is, like, sure, like, you could be very, very good at using the one tool, but that's because you've got many years of experience using it. So like, if somebody has been using Photoshop since Photoshop 1 or 2 or whatever, you know, and they're using Photoshop CC now, I'm sure they're like a genius. Like, they're so quick and so good, and that's amazing. That's great. But also, like, a lot of people are using like Clip Studio or some other thing that's on the iPad, you know. So I'm rambling, but like, the point of it is that you need to be really good at adapting. To do that, you need to be okay with admitting that you don't know something. And that is basically like, you know, you need to kill your ego and just be like, nope, this is why I like being the dumbest person in the room. I'm like, no, this head is empty. I'm fucking dumb. But like, as long as I can Google it, as long as I can learn how to figure it out, I will do that. And if you have that attitude when you first join like any company, I think that is so much better. Like, having a good attitude and willing to learn and finding out new things is so much better than, say, somebody who is a full-on expert, but they think they're like a know-it-all and they're difficult to work with, you know?
Yes, agree with you. Because like I think the evolution of like the tech that we use in the game industry is like evolving very, very quick, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's interesting, adaptive. All right, let's get back to your journey, your career. Your first job in the game industry as a 2D artist. So your main task is to create asset, right? I don't know, maybe characters, maybe background, something like that. Was it also included in creating UI?
So my very, very first job as a 2D artist, my work was mostly, we were porting games. So at a time, we were porting games from the PSP to PC and PS Vita. It was all amazing old tech. But also, PS Vita was like the very first dev kit that I had on my desk, and it was really, really cool. Sorry, someone rang the bell and that just completely threw me off. So the company that I was working at, we were making, we were porting games from the PSP to the PS Vita. And what this means was that it was mostly like, we weren't creating new things. We were kind of upscaling existing assets and existing games, you know? So because like, when you create stuff on the PSP, like, you don't need all of the 2D assets are quite small because the PSP, you know, it's very low resolution and it's an older tech. And the PS Vita, you have like higher resolution. So if you scale the thing up, you know, the image is going to look very blurry and things like that.
Mm.
So a lot of the work that we were doing was mostly like, you know, kind of cleaning assets up and make sure that, you know, the HD version looks HD. So it was, so I think for like a first video games experience. It was very good for me because I get to see source files, you know, I get to see kind of like opening up a car and looking at, in, you know, the engine inside.
Yeah,
without building my own car first, you know? So like I can see how they made it and like how they've done it. And it was, and one of the things I remember was that the company was actually a Japanese company and we were based in the UK. So we got some like source files and like some of the Photoshop files, you know, all the layers and stuff. And I think they had a very angry artist because all the layers were just like, oh, this is stupid. I hate this. You know, like really, Yeah, the layer names is kind of like that. But I think they're just having an art time. And I was like, I don't think
oh
that
gosh.
Artist, when they were making this, they would realize like, 5 years later, like
somebody gonna open it,
like a little junior artist in the UK is gonna see this file, right?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so that made me realize, like, oh, like nothing, you know, nothing is only just for you. Like anything could be, anyone could see it. So always, you know,
always rename layer perfectly.
Like yeah, there's a saying where like, nothing is a placeholder. So yeah, if you put something in the video game and call it a placeholder, 20% of those placeholder will probably stay in there.
Stay there, yes.
It will ship. Yeah, so oh my make gosh. Sure you never don't put any bad words, you know.
I see. When you do porting, did the process of cleaning the art to make it the resolution higher, is it the process that you did, is it you redraw it or inserting new pixel? What did you do actually?
Well, it depends. And some of it is literally just like we have like the source Photoshop files of all the layers, right? And it's, let's say, you know, it's like 512 by 512, you know, which is small, and we need to make it like four times bigger to like, you know, 102/1024 or 2048, right? So you kind of just make that big, you just scale it up and just draw on top of it, basically. Yeah. So we want to preserve the original art as much as possible because, again, you know, when you're porting, it's not about you, it's about the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's correct.
But yeah.
I see. And when did the moment that you realized that you want to have more specialty in user interface? I mean, you did, right? You create art, right?
I think, again, I can't believe just how lucky I was with the job that I had because, so if you remember, I said Double 11 at the time, they were very, very small, like super small. And we only had 3 artists. So in our art team, there's me, I'm the 2D artist, and then there's a concept artist, and then the third guy is our 3D modeler. So he's like a character artist, you know, he sculpts 3D designs. So we're very like specifically in these jobs. So whenever an art related work comes along, like it comes to our team. So it will either be me or the concept artist or our 3D guy. And our concept artist, his name is Dave. He is like Dave Padgett. He's like one of the most amazing concept artists I've ever met. And at the time, he was just starting out. He's super famous now. He does all like the big movies and TV and film and games, like really big things. I'm just like, yeah, I knew him before he was famous. But like, I love Dave, but also like he was not great at graphic design. So anything to with like fonts or text, you know, graphic design and illustration are two very different things. And Dave has some of the best skills in illustration. Whereas for me, I really, really liked design. I really like graphic design. So, you know, fonts and, you know, color composition, whatever, layouts, things like that. And just out of pure luck, based on like our skill set, a lot of UI related work kind of automatically came to me. And I was just thinking, oh, this is, you know, like I really like this because I know like when I first started on video games, I quickly learned that not a lot of people like UI. Like a lot of artists, they want to be concept artists or they want to do, you know, characters or environments, and even the programmers, because you have like specific programming for gameplay, programming for network, and then you have UI programming, which is its own thing. And not a lot of people liked it. And I was just like, why? Because I really enjoy this. So I think that's when I realized, like, okay, cool. Like, I feel like I'm good at this and I like it. And I think that's the two important things, right? That you're good at something and you also like doing it and you can make money from it. That's your job. That's the thing that you should be doing for a living. So
yes.
That's so as a 2D artist, that's when I started. I literally Googled what is UI. Like,
okay.
Yeah. I'm already working in games and I already have like a few titles shipped under my name, you know? Like and I was still Googling like what is UI? What is that? And then that's when I started, you know, looking up UI portfolios, because I needed to, because of visa issues, I needed to apply for another job.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to start looking specifically. So my job search changed from, you know, 2D artist to UI artist. And it's
UI artist.
Yeah, it's completely different. It's such a different job spec. And I looked up portfolios, you know, I looked up like famous UI people, or, well, famous. I mean, like, I'll play a video game and if I like the UI, I would actually like go onto the internet and Google like who made the UI for this game.
Right.
And then to see if I can find their portfolio. And then I look at it and that's how I kind of, oh, they have this, they have that. Maybe I should make something that is like this. Yeah.
Wow, that's great. That's great. That's a great tip. I think everybody should take a note. I think when you find like, whether you want to be UI artist or sound designer or anything and you like it into the game, Google the name of the person who works on that and look. I mean, oh,
yep.
That's great.
Yep. So that's exactly, and I still recommend doing that because as artists, you know, they have to have an online portfolio because, you know, people are always applying for jobs and things. And that's kind of how I did it. But I ironically, this is funny, I don't have an online portfolio. So if you Google me, you can't find my portfolio anywhere. it's not that I'm secretive. It's just that I was just really lazy. I was too lazy to like create an actual online portfolio. But like, I have like a PDF. I have a, like, I go old school. I have a PDF that I would send a PDF to like the individual studios. So even though like I'm not online, like they can still see my work on that, and yeah, and usually they do give like a bit of an art test, and I do quite well in them. So I just never needed one. So.
All right. Oh,
so this tactic works, but not on everybody.
True. That's really true. That's really true. Is there any difference between UI designer or UI artist in video game and in apps? Like application.
Yeah. So I would say like it's not, the skill set needed is absolutely not too different. Like you can definitely work in apps if you want to. And people who are already working in software apps and things, as a UI designer, you can 100% work in video games as well. Like it's exactly like the same kind of skill set. In fact, all of my resources, like things I read up on, blogs that I read, and people that I follow, like it's a healthy amount of both apps people and games people. That's how I keep up to date on like what's the latest trend or like what is the newest user experience finding, you know, things like that. But I would say video games are a lot more interesting, like so much more fun and interesting. And because the thing with apps is that I don't know if you noticed, like if you ever like open between 2, 3, 4 different apps in your phone, you'll start to feel like they're all kind of the same, you know? What I mean? Yeah. They're obviously not exactly the same, but because human interaction with human computer interaction, right? Like there is this path towards what is the optimal interaction, like what is the best way for you to interact with something that is on your screen, on your phone, you know? Like having a bar on the bottom nearer to your thumb is usually like a better way to do things than putting it at the top. So all of those like design patterns, what happens with that is that it kind of funnels all of your like designs into something that's quite, I want to say predictable, No matter what app you're using. And the fact that we are using apps so much now, like you have this expectations of how an app should work. So this is why, like, especially like new apps that come out, and if it's a bit janky, you're like, oh, like this feels weird. It's because they're new and, you know, like they haven't had time to like, you know, have all this quality of life fixes that older apps, you know, that has been around for like 10 years or whatever, like they've kind of like, you know, got that to like a slick experience. But with video games, right? With video games, because every video game is so different. And I mean this by genre. So like if you imagine a shooter game or a puzzle game or a narrative game or even like a dancing game, each one of these it have their own patterns, have their own like, you know, different, I want to say like a collection of expected behaviors and things like that. And so so I said that I really like JRPGs. With JRPGs, you know, there's like action based and then there's a turn based, you know, where you wait your turn. Even that has their own like, you know, like specific ways of how do you make a turn based UI, you know, versus an action UI. And when I was making Rolodrome, it's an action game, you know, it's very like very fast moving and it's also a shooter. So how do you combine two genres put together? And you have to know both the genres quite well to make sure that when you do make a genre that is mashing up two different things, it feels natural. So I think like the challenges in games UI is so, so much more interesting, and you can have fun with it, you know, because like, you know, because with apps, you kind of have to make it usable as in like, it has to be usable. That is number one thing, like with everything. But with video games, you know, we have a fantasy kind of layout or like a sci-fi theme or a more modern theme or whatever. And, you know, even in mobile games, you have a very just hyper casual kind of look as well. Even they have their own style. So it's just like super varied. And like each game that I worked on is so unique. Like the individual problems are just so interesting to solve. And I think that's what I love the most about games.
I see. And also in game, usually like every UI can have their own character, like maybe like in Persona or some games have like really, really unique UI, and you can express yourself on by using user interface.
Yeah, exactly.
I see. And I think this is going to be the main question from everybody when they're reading the title or like the job title between UI and UX. What's the difference between those role? And as a UX designer in video game, what did you do usually?
So UI design is basically the graphic design, the look, you know, how the colors that are out and everything. So everything on top, that is UI design. And everything behind that, which is the layout and how does it feel, and is it doing the thing that we want it to, are the users using it the way that we want it to, that is user experience design. And they are two very different things, but a lot of companies tend to have like the one person doing both jobs, as in sometimes you can see UI/UX designer. But I've seen a lot of companies now separate that work to like two different roles, so a UI designer and a UX designer. And I think that would be the better way to do it for sure. But also, it depends on how big your company is, you know, as in like if you can afford a whole other person, that'd be great, but sometimes you can't. So maybe you might need somebody who wears like multiple hats. But yeah, so the UX designer, you know, they will have like a feature that they need to design for, and then they need to test it. You know, that's when you have like user testing. We have some people, you know, sometimes they create prototypes before even getting into the game itself. And then you have like slightly different people. You know, if you get more than five people just to play your prototype, you'll get like an idea, like what is wrong with it. And that's enough for you to like continue iterating on it before putting it into the game engine itself, because the time that it takes for like an engineer, for a programmer and a UI designer to like really make it look good, you know, is a lot. Like, it's a lot of time, it's a lot of effort, and you want to make sure that the design in there is something that you think would work. So that's where UX designers come in first. You kind of design the wireframes, the layout, you know, is it working the way that you intended to? And then you put it in game, you know, with the UI designers, you know, they kind of like, wireframes are just like black and white, and it's just like boxes with some text on it. It's very basic, but you know, it's functional. It's like the way that you want it to work. And then UI designers basically make it pretty, make it like on theme, and making sure everything like looks good and feels good, gives you good feedback. So, you know, because like when you press a button, you want to make sure that, oh, like that button's being pressed, you know, you get like, or like when you equip something or what, anything that a player does, there needs to be feedback back to the player that the thing has happened. And all of that is within the UI design of things. So yeah, but also like once you implement it in game, that's not the end of it. It's still another round of testing, you know, like, okay, it's in game, and then you kind of put it in the hands of like a few players, and you kind of watch them, and you take notes, and then you do an interview with them. So yeah, so I would say like the UX design is a lot of the problem solving of like thinking about layout, about, you know, features, you know, and you work really closely with your game designers, you work closely with a creative director, you know, like, is this what they wanted? Is this, because sometimes with video games is that the possibilities is so big. Like, it could do this, you know, it could do X, Y, and Z, but you have to think about the game as a whole. Like, is this game more about the action, or is it more about the story? So maybe design, you know, design A, you know, is more about the action. And you're like, okay, maybe you should go down this route, you know, even though like design B is just as good, but you know, we want the player to be doing something a bit different. Yeah. So there's a lot of, like, as a UX designer, you're constantly talking to like everyone else, you know, like you have to talk to the artists, you have to talk to the designers, you have to talk to the programmers, because sometimes there's a technical limitation about what you can or cannot do. So you might be thinking like, oh, I want to have, you know, let's say like a character select screen and you're choosing a character. You might design for a scene where like, oh, I want this character, you know, to be in 3D, and you can like move the character around. You can have different poses. The, you know, the programmer would say like, actually, we can't have 3D characters. We can only have 2D images in this because, you know, we don't have that much space, or we don't have enough programmers. Like, those are technical limitations. So now we have to design for, instead of 3D, like, you know, character, you have to think of it as an image. Okay, cool. If we can only do an image, what does that image look like? You know, so it is a lot of just talking with different people and creating something that satisfies all of your different clients or all of your different like stakeholders. So for me, like in one room, I would have at least 3 or 4 different people that I need to take notes from and be like, oh, so this guy wants it to be like this, and this guy wants it to be like this, and this guy said, you know, and I go back and I create something that hits everybody's requirements.
I see. Is the scope of a UX designer only touching the interaction on the user interface, or also the features inside the game? I mean, like, I don't know, maybe are we going to have like a gun or a sword or something like that? Is that also the UX designer job, or that's from game designers?
It really depends. So it depends. So you have to work very closely with the designers. And I would say, okay, let's say, you know, like the weapon feature. So let's say our game has weapons, and what kind of weapons do you have? So you have like melee, you have guns, or you have, you know, short range, long range, like all of these decisions, they're game designers' decisions. So like the game designers will decide, we will have, you know, we have a sword, we'll have a gun, we will have a shield. And then the UX designer, their job is then to be like, okay, cool. So the designers want these weapons in it. So it's my job to make sure that the player can access these weapons as when they need it to, you know, like what is the best way for them to get to those weapons? So like, is it using a D-pad, or is it using like using a menu, or is it just using something else entirely? And what if, you know, we only can only have 4 weapons at one time. So, and you maybe have like 10. How do you let the player choose only four weapons? Do you have a shortcut where it's like up, down, left, right? Or do you have to open the thing, open your menu and see all of your weapons? Or like, there's so many questions that you need to ask. So I would say like the designers will decide the feature. So, you know, what is going to be in the game, like the weapons. And the UX designer, they have to make sure that when the players use those things, they're using as the ways the designers want them to.
I see. So it's more toward the player and the users rather than like the mechanic or like the gameplay itself.
Yeah. So the mechanics and the gameplay, that is designers, they will decide that. And for us, we're like a bridge between the designers and the players. Because if this is why testing is important. So if the players are playing the game and, you know, let's say like, oh, in this level, they're not using the gun at all. Why are they not using the gun? It's a lot better to use the gun, you know? And then we realize that, oh, the setting is really hidden. Like they didn't even know. Like maybe there was no notification or something to tell the player like, hey, use the gun here. You know, like you have a new gun, use it. So that's where user experience comes in. And we're like, okay, maybe we should prompt like a notification saying that you have a new weapon. Or, you know, like maybe we should put a tutorial in here where, you know, like a tutorial box, be like, by the way, new weapon, use it here, you know? So the decision the decision to like, you know, you unlock this weapon at level 2, that's the game designer decision. And for us, when we test it, we have to see like, does the player know they have unlocked this weapon? And do they know that they can use it? If they don't, that means we have to tell them.
I see. Some players don't use the weapon once is because of they don't know. So it means they need improvement in the interaction, the UX. But it also can be because of the balance of the game, right? Maybe the weapon is not interesting enough. People see like this is too weak or it's not have value for me. How do you conduct the test that later on you can decide this is the UX problem and this is the game design problem?
Yeah, so that's why when you do user testing, you watch them play. Sometimes we have people talk about what they're thinking when they're playing, you know, maybe like sometimes like this is why watching streamers play is very interesting as well, because like they're always talking about what they're thinking when they're playing. And second, we do interviews with the players, like afterwards, you know, let's say a playtest session finishes, we'll talk to them and be like, so when you played this, you know, did you find it difficult? Why did you find it difficult? You know, we do have like certain questions that we can ask them. So yeah, so it really depends. When you do playtesting, you can't just give them the game and be like, okay, here you go, play. More like, you know, you have an area that you're interested in finding out. So you have a hypothesis of like, okay, we want to see like, is this level good? You know, like, is this, you know, is this thing like that? Do the players realize that they're supposed to do this? And the important thing is that you have a lot of different people playing it. So it's not just like, you know, if you have like, say 20 people playing your game and all 20 are like boys who are 17 or 16 years old, you know, and they go to the same school or whatever, like you're not going to get, you know, a range of responses. So you want to get like maybe like a woman in her 30s or, you know, an older gentleman, you know, or maybe somebody who is colorblind, you know. So all these different things, you can always test for them.
I see. How often usually do you do the test? Is it only at the end of the development when everything is already in, or
no,
how usually
then? Test often. Like, we do definitely test often. So again, this depends on how big your company is. So some people, like some companies, they have entire like user research labs. So we call them user research. They have entire user research labs where they just fly in people. Like I've been to Riot in Los Angeles, the people who make League of Legends. They have so much money. Oh my gosh. But like, so they have an entire user research lab where they just fly in players from like, you know, from China or Hong Kong or something. And they just, you know, test the game for them. You know, that's because they can afford it. But let's say you're not Riot and you know, you're like a smaller company. So there are like, so there are user research companies that you can, like call and license. And then they basically, they have user research labs already, like they have an office, and they just like, they get people in and just to try your game. And then they have the people in UR, so it's called UR. They are usually people with PhDs and stuff, and they're very, very smart. And, you know, they kind of do the analyzing for you, and then they come back with to you with the, you know, they'll come back with to you with like recordings and test results and, you know, like interview results and things like that. But also obviously that you still have to pay them. So let's say you can't. Let's say you're really, really small. So
indies, just 5 people, 10 people. Yeah.
So if you're really, really small, if you're indie, you can just do what I did, which is you start your own user research lab. Because all you need is just a computer and a webcam to record it, and some, you know, and somebody just to like take notes. So, okay. So back when I was in Frontier, we made a roller coaster game. It's called Planet Coaster.
And okay.
Yeah. So I was in a UI design team. So that was like a bunch of people in there, right? Not just me. And we did like a really small user research lab. We had like an empty room, like a meeting room that we set up a computer. We had the game running on it. And we actually grabbed people from the other projects who have never seen our game, or even, or even like people from HR, or people who are like at the front desk, anyone who doesn't play games but still in the company, and they're, you know, they're already there in the office. They're like, hey, can I have some of your time? You know, so we just sit them down and then we watch them play for the first time, and it's so much fun. And like, and you can do it scrappy. So, you know, it's still scrappy, but like, you don't need 500 testers. Like, you need at least five, you know, and if you have like five very different people, you will see the same issue come up really quickly. After like three people, you'll be like, oh, okay, this is like priority one. You need to like change this and stuff. And I did that again in my mobile company, where same thing. In the mobile company, I had a prototype. So it wasn't even a game, a prototype that I put on my phone. And then I put it on the table, and I had like a series of like tasks I want them to do. So I said like, create your profile, or, you know, add friend. So I basically just gave them the prototype, and then I don't tell them where it is, but they know what they're supposed to do. So they try doing it. So I'll sit there in the room and kind of take notes and be like, and they'll be like, oh, okay, I need to create a profile. I'm going to this menu because it says profile. Okay, cool. Nice. Perfect. You know? So like, that's kind of part of like UX design, and you can do it at any point of your video game, meaning you can have it really early on to test prototypes, say a feature that you haven't decided if you wanted it to be in the game or not. So it's a good time to test. Or later on, you know, towards the end, when let's say your game is content complete, meaning you've put in all the features that you want, but you still need to make sure like, you know, you're not taking any features in or out. So this is where you want to see if the, you know, the people like it, or they, you know, they see it at all. Is it not being, you know, upfronted too much? A really good example of this is that some tutorials are too long, and, you know, we found that out because of testing. So we broke up the tutorial rather than just one long tutorial before level one. We have like a short tutorial before level one, and then another tutorial just before level two for like more advanced moves, and then another short one tutorial just like before level three, you know, because you've unlocked new weapons. So we need to teach you how to use that weapon, right? And you don't get that weapon until level three. So why would you put that before level one? You know? So like we broke that up in smaller pieces. So yeah, that's basically UX design.
Wow, that's really interesting. I think this is really eye-opening, because not a lot of people know that there's a role in the game industry, which is UX designer in the game industry. And I hope like a lot of you that listen or watch this in this session can have maybe some ideas, right? If they want to be a UX designer, you can work in the game industry too as a UX designer. And I think the insight that you gave us is really, really interesting, Anissa. Thank you so much. Before we close this session, I want to ask the last question from you. For anyone out there who want to start a career in the game industry, do you have any tips for them?
Yeah, so I would say if you can join a community, that would be the best way to start. When I say community, I don't mean If you can join a community, I would say that would be the best way to get a start in the video games industry. And what I mean by community is you can join a Discord, or you can join Twitter, or you can join any other online spaces where you can meet other people who are also, you know, either in the industry or also working towards getting into industry. And this will be unique to what is available around your area. So if you're, let's say you're in the US or the UK, or I'm guessing a lot of our listeners will be in Southeast Asia, you want to join those like local game dev meetups with everybody in there, you know? So if there is like, I know in Malaysia, we have the IGDA, the International Game Developers Association, that's IGDA. Yep. So they have like international chapters, and sometimes they do meetups. So the meetups is always like a really cool mixture of both indies or hobbyists, or even like experts, people or, you know, professionals already in the industry. And you can just show up and show your work. So obviously, if you're interested in starting in video games, you kind of need to have a certain skill, right? Find out what that is. Find out what is that you're very good at, and find out what is that, what kind of job fits your description, you know? So for me, I liked art. I really like graphic design. That's how I felt 2D artist was a thing. But then UI, user interface, is, you know, is the thing that I felt like I was very good at, and I enjoyed it so much. I know people really like, you know, concept art or 3D artists. Even for 3D art, you can specialize in character art or environment art, right? So let's to use the 3D artist as a example. You want to join, you know, 3D art communities. You know, you want to have a portfolio that you can put your artwork in. Don't follow my footsteps and not have an online portfolio. It doesn't work anymore. Like, you have, like, because everything is online now, need to have like an online presence. You know, have a LinkedIn, have a, you know, have an Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok, any whatever it is, to show your work. That is number one thing. Number one is show your work, and number two is finding a community. And community means making friends, you know, networking. And when I say making friends, I genuinely 100% mean that. Like, when you go to these meetups and people network, so many people, especially younger people, that I realized they will go up to people and ask like, oh, who do you work for? And then depending on your answer, they would either talk to you or they don't. And that's, that's not great. Like, you want to find, all of my closest friends in games right now are people that I just happened to be friends with, like when I started like 5-10 years ago, because we were all on the same journey, and we're all very, very supportive of each other. So that's the thing. It's competitive, but it's not meant to be competition, if that makes sense. You know, like it is very difficult to get into games industry, but also, you know, sometimes like an opportunity, it might not be for you, but it might be for your friend. You want to support them in that, right? You want to like, hey, you know, you want to share job openings to each other. You want to share, like, you know, you want to like give feedback and critique and help uplift each other. I would say, like, finding peers is so much more important than sucking up to someone who is already in the industry, genuinely. And so like make yourself known. And of course, general rule of life, just don't be a dick, you know? Because
yes.
If I, as a professional, you know, I'm going to go to industry events, like conferences or meetups, and you also go to those events and you're not in the industry yet, but then I see you all the time, I'm going to start recognizing you, right? So you want to remember what kind of impression that you give people, and you need to be polite, you need to be kind, just don't be a dick, and know that everybody is learning. I think sometimes in the games industry, ego can be a huge issue. Yeah. And you know, just be nice. That's literally it. Just be nice.
Agree with you. Totally agree with you. Thank you so much, Anisa. This is really interesting. I really have fun talking with to you. All right, so everybody, I think that's it for today. I hope this session can give you insight and courage to press start your career as a game developer. So I think we can wrap this session. I am Adam Anissa Smita. Keep playing games and start making games. Thank you, Anissa. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.